Are you looking for a first communion, confirmation, or graduation gift? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is the new bonded leather cover edition of Luther's Small and Large Catechisms. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, Martin Luther's Small and Large Catechisms, 1-800-325-3040.
If we do this, we'd be going in shorthanded.
Yeah, you mean because he killed all our friends?
We owe this to everyone who's not in this room to try.
It's not about how much we lost. It's about how much we have left. We're the Avengers. We gotta finish this. You trust me?
I do.
Live with your own failure. Where did that bring you? Back to me.
That's the trailer for Avengers Endgame. We've been reviewing this movie with Pastor Ted Geese, and we've had a lot to say about the universe that is Marvel and the way it's coming to a head here in these two films, Avengers Infinity War, and the second part of it, Avengers Endgame. What else is there to say? And I wonder about something observed recently by a regular guest here on the program, Terry Mattingly. We were talking with him about what he called the God-shaped hole in the Avengers universe. He says it's essentially a universe without the God that we know. It has its gods, but they are gods with feet of clay. And I wonder what Pastor Ted Geese thinks about that particular assessment of Avengers Infinity War and Endgame. Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Tuesday, May the 14th. We continue our review of Avengers Endgame. We'll take your questions and your comments as well. You can email them to us, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send a tweet at @issuesetc, or we've left space at our Facebook fan page for your questions and comments on Avengers Endgame, facebook.com/issuesetc. Facebook.com/issuesetc. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
I would like to start by unpacking a piece of advice that in this film you have to give us some context here. The character Thor receives from his mother, heaven been given a chance to actually see his mother again. And the advice is this, quote, "Everyone fails at who they are supposed to be. The measure of a person, a hero, is how they succeed at being who they are." What is there for us?
Yeah, this is, you know, when you're watching movies, sometimes you're, for me at least, I'm listening for like thesis statements or like moments where a character is saying something that is important for like the whole film, essentially. And, you know, one way that you know that something is important is if it gets repeated, let's say. So in this case, he hears this from his mother, and he's in a situation where his mother died, and because of the time travel aspect, he was able to see her again. And he himself, Thor, has become very despondent and has spiraled into a kind of depression after the events of Infinity War. So he gets to see his mother, and she gives him this advice. And this advice is half good advice and half, maybe depending on how you're looking at it from what angle, maybe also bad advice, kind of mixed together. And it gets repeated. So he hears it from his mother, and then at the end of the film, he says it to Valkyrie as he is, again, I guess, spoilers, everybody, if you're not, haven't seen it yet, you know, the very few of you who haven't seen it. At the end of the movie, he says this to Valkyrie as he's kind of passing the mantle of monarchy for the Asgardians to her, as he's going to vacate and go on a little bit of an excursion, the Asgardians of the galaxy, as he goes and joins the cast of characters for the Guardians of the Galaxy films. So again, this is the thing. So it gets repeated at the end of the movie, which makes you really pay attention, right? So this is something, a lesson he's learned from his mother that he's now repeating to someone else, passing it on. And I guess the thing, there's one thing is the first part of it. Everyone fails at who they're supposed to be. This is perfectly good advice. I mean, this is right down in the area of confession and absolution. You know, this is, I, a poor, miserable sinner, I, a sinner in need of the mercy of God, come to you for forgiveness. This works out great. It's the second part that's a little more challenging, and that's the part where he says, the measure of a person, a hero, this is what his mother is telling him, the measure of a person, a hero, is how they succeed at being who they are. And it really depends who you are when you hear that. And it also probably depends on who, what the idea is behind the person who writes that. Because in the kind of moralistic, therapeutic deism kind of end of things, where it's God just wants you to be happy, it doesn't really matter what you're up to. He just wants you to be happy in whatever you're doing. Well, then that's the worst advice ever, right? It's just a terrible bit of advice. Basically, if somebody is despondent, depressed, becoming an alcoholic, if not already an alcoholic, as Thor seems to be at this point with his beer, etc. And it's just like, you do you. That's a problem. Because if he is, if there's any part of him struggling to improve or to get out of his dismal situation or to have any of this rectified, the idea that, you know, success is measured by just being who you are, that's potentially very bad advice. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it kind of pales in comparison to the pithiest of the superhero themes for a movie: with great power comes great responsibility.
Right.
But, you know, that at least in a human sense is universally applicable and perfectly applicable within that movie universe. How applicable is it inside the movie universe? How well does it work inside the story of Avengers Endgame?
Well, I think there's two things going on. So inside the actual story of the movie, this is his mother telling him, hey, do you remember that you're Thor? Like, you are my son. You are Odin's son as well. Like, you seem to have lost your way. So, you know, he reaches out his hand because by going back in time, his hammer Mjolnir still exists then, right? It was destroyed by his sister in Thor Ragnarok. But here, earlier in time, it's still there. And that was a way of measuring whether or not he was worthy. So he puts out his hand and he summons Mjolnir. And if Mjolnir does not come to him, his hammer, then he is actually not worthy. But his hammer returns to him, and it's a way in which he remembers who he is. So from a Christian point of view, like, there are going to be times where somebody's lost their way, and maybe the pastor or a mother or a father or somebody in the family will say, hey, remember you're a Christian? Remember you're baptized? Because even if somebody's lost their way, it doesn't mean they're not baptized. So remember who you are. So in that case, you know, in the case of the movie, particularly because he is this character who's been imbued with certain attributes by virtue of being the son of Odin within this whole Asgardian kind of thing, within the context of the film, it kind of works. But the problem is there's an audience that's sitting watching the movie. And some of these audience members are cluing into things that are being said in the movies. They're having these great sentimental and nostalgic and particularly emotional responses to all this stuff. So then if somebody who's in that therapeutic, moralistic, deist kind of worldview hears this and they're not thinking about their baptism or they're not thinking about who their identity is in Christ Jesus or something like that, and it's just more like the you do you kind of a thing, then this becomes really terrible advice. Does that make it a little clearer?
Yes, but and to my way of thinking, I think of it a little more simplistically. It's kind of the message of every single movie ever made. You know, you always had the power within you.
Yes.
You just you were just too sad or depressed to know it. And once you realized you had the power within you, then you realize that although you are the cause of all your own problems, you're also the solution to all of them.
Yeah. And a lot of movies like that particularly is the case for all of these kind of like zero to hero movies where the person doesn't believe in themselves and they just need encouragement. And then they discover what other people already knew or what was hidden or latently in them from the beginning. In the case of this, with these 22 movies and Thor showing up numerous times throughout all of them and where he started from. And if you go all the way back to that first Thor movie, there's a scene because he's quite arrogant and quite full of himself near the very beginning of the movie where Anthony Hopkins playing Odin says, "You are not worthy," and strips him of everything and drops him off at Earth through the Bifrost. And he, you know, the moment that he actually summons the hammer and it comes to him is the conclusion of the movie. So he's a character who has, it's very clear that this has been imbued on him and it can be taken away from him, this power that he has. And he is not like zero to hero exactly, because we've seen him like on top of his game, so much so to the point that in the Infinity War film, he's laying like unconscious and they're like, "Who is this man?" And Drax is like, "This is not a man. This is like, you know, an angel and a pirate had a child," like they, the way that he puts it. So there is a whole kind of like, they're really working on a hard contrast here. And he is like lost his way as a character, which exactly what you're saying is true. But in addition to that, we also have this pre-existing situation with Thor that we know of as viewers of the films over the years.
I want your reaction to something that Terry Mattingly said recently when we were talking about what he called the God-shaped hole in the Avengers universe. And he said, this is essentially a godless universe in the Christian sense. And that the only gods, the only substitutes they have for gods are these feet of clay heroes. What are your thoughts there with a minute or so?
Yeah, I think that's pretty insightful. I know that, like, again, like a lot of drama comes from, you know, characters going through a transition, like they have to learn something, grow, like get somewhere. And you see that with various characters in these movies, that they have these long character arcs, and character arcs can be very satisfying. But the other thing that Terry was talking about in that interview that I also had a chance to listen to was he was talking about how if you had, like, in the aftermath of like all of these people turning into dust around the world, everything that was alive, if you had people in mosques, if you had them in churches grieving, if you had funerals and funerals and funerals, then you could upset certain groups of people around the world and you might ruin your opportunity to make as much money as you humanly could make, right? So they play it safe by maybe downgrading everything in it. On the other hand, there are little bits and pieces of like Christian faith that show up in all of these movies, notably that first Avengers film. You know, you have Captain America, you know, who, and in his movie, the first Avenger, Captain America movie, where you get the sense that this is like an Episcopal, like American from the 40s, and he believes the things that he believes. And that's why when he's meeting Thor and Loki and all these guys, he makes that comment about to Black Widow saying, you know, "Well, there's only one God, ma'am, and he doesn't dress like that," right? Like talking about their fancy Asgardian capes and things. So, you know, he's a Christian. They, even in like that Age of Ultron, a lot of activity happens right in this big church setting. So there's that. But they really don't do much with it. And in fact, one of the things that, like that God-shaped hole, like there is something there instead of the Christian faith specifically, or traditional faiths specifically. And that was when they had this little, at the beginning of the movie, they had Captain America in Endgame, and he was at like a counseling session. And in the counseling session, he is shown as somebody giving approval to a gay first date, right? So you have a character who's the only character who's really been allowed to be obviously Christian, who is like old time Christian in terms of American culture and ideas. And he's saying, he's giving his tacit approval to this gay relationship that's being talked about in this little, counseling session. So like even the Christianity that's there has to conform to this new orthodoxy within Hollywood and within like Disney and stuff like that. So they want to not get anybody too upset, but at the same time, they want to please the furthest left-leaning ideas that are possible to please and placate.
Jeremy in Sandy, Utah has to say this. When we're looking at the personal arc for fictional characters such as Thor, assessing their relationship with a Christian worldview, how do you decide where in that worldview they fall? For example, Thor's moment of redemption or his worthiness is cited in Pastor Geese's review as a sanctification moment of worthiness, and we're warned that the chubby, despondent Thor might model laziness in a sanctified life. Why not consider it to be analogous to a justification moment? Thor has been living a fairly unworthy life, but was still found by the reckoning of the hammer to be redeemable, justification metaphor, he asks, and then proceed to do the work of saving the universe, sanctification. That's just an example from the review, and it might be worth discussing that specific moment, but more broadly, how do you decide where a character or character arc might line up with the life cycle of a Christian or an element of Scripture? What are your thoughts there before we break?
Yeah, well, that's a insightful question. And I guess the thing with these is that you're going to come to these movies with, I guess there's different ways of approaching the criticism of these movies. So like as a Lutheran pastor, I'm going to look at it and like even within a fictional narrative, like a character like Captain America, who in the fictional narrative is allowed to be a Christian, I'm going to apply to him ideas that, you know, like things that are more specific to like Christian theology and my application of my criticism of that character. So when he biffs it, when it comes to what a 1940s Christian would be thinking about on the average about, gay related things. That's, I feel like that's somebody kind of trying to push an agenda or something using characters to do that. In the case of a character like Thor, I think like we were talking about earlier, like the notion of like, if you apply the concept of baptism, not directly to the character, but if you think about it in connection with that, you could say, you know, you're baptized even if you've lost your way. And that's that sanctification piece. And in also in that is you're baptized into Christ Jesus and there's your justification in him. So in the case that, you know, with Thor is, let's say, justified by being the son of his father. And that's kind of where you could look at it in that way, that he had forgotten who he was and he needed his mother to tell him again who he was.
When we come back, Melba in Tennessee says, I think the themes of sacrifice to save the world are important. We'll see what else she has to say as we review the movie Avengers Endgame. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption.
Like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Are you looking for a first communion, confirmation, or graduation gift? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is the new bonded leather cover edition of Luther's Small and Large Catechisms. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, Martin Luther's Small and Large Catechisms, 1-800-325-3040.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During May, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their ministry of the month, Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Are you a high school guy or girl interested in theology and thinking about becoming a pastor or deaconess? Christ Academy High School at Concordia Theological Seminary is the thing for you. Spend 2 weeks worshiping and learning like a seminary student while having fun and building lasting friendships. Join us this summer at Christ Academy from June 16th to the 29th. Visit ctsfw.edu/ca for more info.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie Avengers Endgame and taking your questions and your comments as well. This one comes from Melba in Tennessee. Ted, she says, I think the themes of sacrifice to save the world is important, not just the sacrifice at the end, but the more unexpected sacrifice necessary for the Soul Stone. Please explore that character's arc and the foreshadowing present in the determination she exhibits, even in the despair. What's she talking about there?
She's talking about, like, when they go on this time heist, they break off into groups and go off to get the various stones from the past. And it is Black Widow, played by Scarlett Johansson, so Natasha Romanoff, and Hawkeye, played by Jeremy Renner, who go off together to get the Soul Stone. So this, you know, matches up with the previous film, Infinity Wars, where it's Thanos and his daughter Gamora who go to the location where it turns out what has to happen is the one who gets the Soul Stone has to sacrifice that which they love most. So then, you know, Thanos had threw his daughter off the cliff, and the joke, while the irony was, is that people didn't believe that he loved her in the first place. Well, she certainly didn't believe it. And in this case, now you have these two characters, Hawkeye and Black Widow, going to the same location. And the way that at the beginning of the movie, Black Widow is despondent in her own kind of way, except what she does is, instead of like holding herself up in a shack someplace to drink beer and play video games, she just doubles down and puts her life into continuing the Avengers initiative. And really what she comes to realize in a really profound way is that she doesn't have any other family, that they themselves, these people are her family. So when it comes to who's going to throw themselves off the cliff, in this case, they're not throwing each other off the cliff, but whoever is going off the side of the cliff is going to sacrifice themselves in order that the other one would get the Soul Stone and be able to take it and put it together and make it all of the Infinity Stones come together. So the two characters of Hawkeye and her fight it out to see who can throw themselves off that cliff. So she does it. She isn't the one that ends up doing it. And I kind of didn't like this, the way this worked out. But Jeremy Renner's character has got a family with kids. And in the previous movie, Infinity Wars 1, they showed her almost like the aunt to these kids. And so she gave her life for her family, which was the Avengers Initiative, all of these people, half of them which were lost. So that's where that one fits. And again, people are conflicted about which person should have done it or not. And that's what was going on with that.
Johan says, the people lost because of Thanos' snap were brought back to life. It's kind of like how the dead shall be risen again in the last day. There's a thought that struck me when I saw Infinity War, how they kind of disintegrated, and I thought, wow, this is like the opposite of the resurrection.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, too. I had done a presentation on Infinity War at a Higher Things conference last summer and talked about like the end of the world and talked about, you know, this particular thing and the resurrection. I think in the case of this film and the way it's played out and the way that it's played out, you could almost more think of this in terms of like Lazarus or the widow of Nain's son or the widow of Zarephath's son, that, or the Valley of the Dry Bones, that these are people who are coming back to life, but then they're going to live out a natural life and die. Whereas in the actual resurrection on the last day, and again, like, you know, these movies are total fictions and they're just drawing upon little bits and pieces of the true story, which is scripture. On the last day, the people who are risen from the dead are going to be immortal, incorruptible, and their life in Christ will be forever.
Johanna in Illinois has several questions. We'll take them here. Which character arc had the most satisfying or fitting ending? And on the flip side of that question, did you find any of the characters' actions or the endings to be unsatisfying or out of character?
Well, I kind of, probably the most satisfying, you know, would be Tony Stark's. I mean, I think people mostly would probably say that's a satisfying ending, you know, love you 3000 and all the rest of that. In terms of like unsatisfying things, like one thing that I, on first viewing, and I've only watched it the one time, but I've thought about it a lot since then, I was paying close attention. The one thing that I didn't like is this kind of fighting back and forth between Black Widow and Hawkeye to see which one would sacrifice themselves for the other to get the Soul Stone. And one of the things I didn't like was the idea is what you love most. And somehow when I first watched it, there's romantic tension at some point between these characters. And, you know, like Hawkeye is married with kids and stuff. And I'm like, what does this mean? Like, I kind of got like on a side thought trail on that. And maybe I was running down the wrong path because they really do have maybe a more platonic kind of relationship. But the fact that he would sacrifice himself so she would live, but then abandon his family and his kids, I didn't like that very much. Like, I know that like they were already gone because they all vanished in the snap, but there was something about all of it that like it was because of the combination of characters, it was like running interference in my mind. So, you know, I've thought about it since then and I've kind of come around on that, but at the time I didn't like that very much.
Johanna also says, I would love to hear your predictions for the MCU post-Endgame. There are a ton of Marvel movies in production or started to begin production in the next few years. Where do we go from here, she asks.
Well, they acquired Fox property-related things, so the production company. And I heard somewhere today that I think they bought Hulu. So like they're just gobbling up everything. So I guess it would make sense that they should go with Galactus, who is the eater of worlds, because Disney is just gobbling up everything out there. And that's a character that was leased out to Fox. So now they've got that back. Also, probably as a big villain, they probably would want to go with Dr. Doom, because he's kind of like the anti-Tony Stark. Like he's smart and he's like a combination of Tony Stark and Doctor Strange kind of thing, in a Darth Vader mask almost. That might be, if they're going to do a large set of arc, a big arc of stories, then maybe Doctor Doom might be the way to go with that. The other thing is there's something called Secret War, where the Skrull, which were introduced in the Marvel Universe Captain Marvel movie, that has something to do with all it. Like certain characters could be secret agents and stuff like that. They could do that. The other thing that I think is interesting is because they've kind of broke open the whole idea of multiverse universes, they can have all sorts of things going on. They could introduce you to the Fantastic Four, and they could be already had their own parallel story going on in a different timeline if they wanted, you know. So there's a way to introduce all of these characters into the movies. And by doing that, you could have Dr. Doom come from a different multiverse completely into this one if you wanted to do that kind of thing. I don't know. They they pretty much have open, they've got an open checkbook and an open slate that they can do whatever they want with it, I guess.
Final question. How many more Avengers movies can they make without Iron Man? He is the, at least he has been, the linchpin of the group.
Well, I mean, Iron Man and Captain America. So this is where the comic books have had this already, this idea where they can just, because Iron Man is also this suit, you could have a different person take up the mantle of Iron Man. So you can have like an Elijah and Elisha kind of a thing going on. And in the same way, you had that Elijah-Elisha moment where Captain America in this film passes the mantle on to Falcon. So you get a new Captain America potentially for the next iteration of these films. Then the question is, how good do they do at, in terms of a job of passing the torch in actuality? Not just the sentimental moment when they do it, but the actual follow through on it. Is it going to be believable? Are people going to relate to it, etc.? And are they going to be willing to shell out the money for that?
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. You can read his review of Avengers Endgame at IssuesETC.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Pastor Peter Bender about the historic liturgy and the Apostles' Creed. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.